regular October 2nd Sea Parks Commission meeting. I will begin with the pledge. Vice Chair Warren, would you please lead?
Hands over hearts. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Chair Schauber?
Here.
Vice Chair Warren?
Here.
Commissioner Bowie?
Here.
Commissioner Diaz?
Here.
Commissioner Hansen? Commissioner Jones?
Here.
Commissioner Gabbard?
Here.
Chair, we have quorum.
Thank you. At this time, we're going to open all communications from the public. At this time, members of the public may address the commission on any matter within our jurisdiction. I think we have some that would like to speak
on non-agenda
items, so if you'll please call them out.
Right. We have four requests to speak, Chair. The first one is Dustin Radat.
I've hiked almost every trail, every county park. You guys are doing a great job, I think. And I've been hiking in the O'Neill Park for about 30 years, and I go there probably once a week. There's a Chirruco Creek restoration project that was done a couple of years ago, and it basically removed all the bamboo and I think like 20 plus invasive species between there's about a mile and a half area between Tijeras Creek Golf Course and Michigo and Las Flores that was cleared out. And I just want to say that it worked really well. I was just there yesterday and it looks great. However, there's a portion that goes, that it didn't cover, the restoration project that goes all the way to Oso Bridge. And the bamboo has completely covered up all the sycamore trees and oak trees. So I know that, I think it was the landfill, there was a mitigation and that's where the money came from to provide. So I just want to say if there's ever an opportunity to, that comes up again, I know there's developers in the area and there's mitigation projects, I think that would be a great area to cover all the way to Oso Bridge and do the same thing that you guys did on the previous area. If I'm not the wrong meeting, please let me know, but I think I'm at the right place.
You're the right place.
Okay, good. And that's basically all I had to say, was just it looks really good. It seems to be working. It's been, I think, about a year and a half, 2 years now. I go there every week, like I said, and it's just that remaining mile and a half, 2 miles between that and Oso Bridge, that it's just been kind of covered with the cigarette. And also I want to say, it's a more remote part of O'Neill Park, but I don't think, you might not realize that there's a lot of visitors and traffic in that area, and there's people from Las Flores, Mission Viejo. There's like 8 different trailheads that lead down into that area. And there's people there all the time, coming from Ladera Ranch even. So I keep up the great work. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Next speaker is Chris Murphy.
Thank you. Chris Murphy. I'm here on the Class 1 pedal assist issue. I'd like to reiterate my previous request that, as noted in the Commission's August 7th minutes, for an update of the status of the OC Parks discussions with regulatory agencies regarding the potential allowance of Class 1 mountain bikes on natural surfaces and trails in the OC Parks. In addition, for the Commission's record on the Class 1 mountain bike issue, I've recently discovered several important pieces of information addressing the concerns we've heard that allowing Class 1 mountain bikes in OC Parks would, one, open the floodgates to all e-bikes, and two, require changes to the OC NCCP HCP reserve documents. First, open floodgates to all e-bikes concerns. I found a very recent study from the East Bay Regional Park District, January 8, 2025, titled E-Bike Data Report on the 2023 Update to Ordinance 38. So they did update the ordinance. They did a study afterwards studying what the level of bike use was. And interestingly, they found that there was no, there was actually a decline post-pandemic of overall use of the park, significant. However, there was a significant increase in e-bike use, but it did not displace any of the decrease in ridership. So you have overall ridership dropping post-pandemic. Many people went around the parks many, many times, so you had a lot of visitations. And so we're getting back to pre-pandemic numbers, but you're also seeing no significant increases after the ordinances are changed in the number of e-bikes. The trends are the same. E-bikes are taking over from legacy bike riders, but it's mostly people also that are older and that are continuing sport rather than new people coming in. So I'm going to put a copy of the study on the record, and you can take a look at what happened up in East Bay. Secondly, we also talked to San Diego, and we found out that their equivalent of the NCCP, the Multiple Species Conservation Program, they used adaptive management to make the entire county open to Class 1 mountain bikes. So they've gone through it already. Nothing to fear. They don't report any significant changes in behavior or that sort of thing. Finally, and just recently, the U.S. Department of Interior, BLM, just issued this week, or just last week, environmental assessment report titled Authorization of E1 Class Bikes on Designated Mountain Bike Trails. This is for Moab, Utah, which is a very heavily used trail system with not a lot of vegetation, that sort of thing, so it's different than our parks. But it goes through in great detail through a FONSI, which is an environmental assessment, all the issues that are raised about e-bikes and answers them and ultimately allows e-bikes on the property. Thank you. I will provide my comments and documents for the record. Thanks.
Next speaker is Robin Gordon.
I wanted to talk to you today about a proposal that's been submitted to the city of Dana Point regarding a storage facility that's being proposed for Baby Beach Park. It's a 5,600 square foot storage facility that will include fencing, turf, storage boxes, and racks to hold outrigger canoes that will be placed directly on what is now currently a heavily used public access, low cost coastal park as part of the Baby Beach area. I request that you consider reassessing the location of the storage facility. I understand that due to the renovations of the harbor, that the Outrigger Club has been asked to move and is looking for additional storage space. I also understand that this is considered a temporary storage facility, but unfortunately there's no plan of moving the storage facility to a permanent location. And the disruption to the park itself, removing the grass, putting in turf, putting up the structures and stuff will permanently damage the area that is currently beautiful and loved by many. I'll also highlight that in an area where we have very few accessible coastal areas, this is one of those that not only offers a safe area to get into the ocean or the harbor, into the water, but also allows for beachgoers, families, picnickers, kids, different clubs and kayakers and paddleboarders to get access easily from the largest parking spots in Baby Beach to the beach to wash down and prep and prepare for their paddles and stuff. And so damaging that space and removing it from public access for a private club to store stuff just seems like sacrilegious. And I would hope that all of you could share in the concern regarding the damage it would do permanently. Even if it were to move to a permanent location, it would forever change the activity and pleasure that Baby Beach and Baby Beach Park bring to our community. So I do have some pamphlets that give more information, including the permit and the location that I would like to leave with you, but that's all I have to say.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And the final speaker is Greg Hall.
message. Thank you for allowing to hear my opinions. I'm here to speak on the outrigger storage area as well. As Robin had mentioned, this is a public park grass area used by many people, children, seniors, families. There is a existing dry storage area at the east end of the harbor, at Harbor Drive and Porto Place. This is a dry storage area for boat owners that don't have slips. There is a massive area with nothing in it. It's paved, it's fenced, it's lighted, it has a launch ramp. There would be no construction necessary. All the outrigger club has to do is move their boats in. This area is not being used. It's virtually empty. There are boats in the dry storage, but it just isn't full. And a secondary space, the canoe storage is here. There's a fence and there's a long grass area right along the present canoe storage. If they needed to tear up grass and put astroturf in and fence it, that would be another viable option. But the dry storage is just simply a no-brainer. There's nothing but moving the boats. And oftentimes, temporary fixes turn into permanent fixes. And who knows how long it's going to be. Also, I post a lot on Data Point Unplugged, so I get a lot of feedback. No one has told me why it's a good thing to put the outriggers at Bailey Beach. There's a bazillion comments about why it shouldn't be there, but nobody has said, hey, this is the reason we need to put it there. This is a good thing. It's not a good thing. So I appreciate your listening and have a good night.
No other comments received.
Is there anyone else from the audience that would like to address the commission on any matters within our subject matter jurisdiction at this time?
My name is Roger Karen, and I'm a resident of Dana Point. And I notice Mr. Gabbard is a commissioner for Coastal City, so maybe I should really address you. I live, very fortunate, I live on the bluffs of Little Bay Beach. And my company actually received the notice on my behalf when I was out of the country that this planning application was in the works. I have to say, I was truly shocked when I saw the applicant for fencing off part of the grassy area of Baby Beach was none other than Orange County Parks. I cannot for the life of me understand how this body, who's to protect our green open spaces, could be making an application to fence off 5,600 square feet of this extraordinary, rare, special area of Baby Beach. People come from all over South Orange County, families, to use this grassy area and the beach. Why? Because it's safe for children. And if you have a pet, you can't have pets on the beach, so they go on the grass. Churches use it. Families use it. Old people use it because they don't like walking in the sand. To turn this into what looks like fenced, private, non-use for the public to use, I'm sorry to say, it's an abomination. I cannot understand how Orange County Parks could countenance even letting an application like this go forward. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be disrespectful. But I really wish Orange County Parks would take a very good look at this, because it seems an extraordinary thing to read. The applicant to do this is Orange County Parks. Please, I urge you, please take a look at this. It doesn't seem to be what you really are about. So anyway, thank you for your time.
Chair, if I could real quick, can I just give my business
card? Sure.
That's fine. Can I also ask if you wouldn't mind filling out a speaker?
Is there anyone else who would like to speak before the commission at this time? Okay, hearing none, I'll go ahead and close the public hearing. I'm sorry. participation. We're now moving on to our consent calendar, which is item number four. Is there anything that wishes to be removed by a commissioner? Have we received any correspondence?
No.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address an agenda item? Okay. Is there a motion to move it?
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody abstained? That passes 6-0. We're now going to have a Brown Act presentation, which is not an environmental issue. So we're going to hear, I believe, from council, right?
Correct.
You're up.
So we're very lucky tonight to have John Cleveland here to explain the Brown Act. And I would ask specific questions that we refrain from talking about them tonight. That is something that we can then connect you with Mark Batarse, who is Parks County Council. So tonight, John's just going to be giving a very broad overview just to make sure everyone understands the Brown Act and what it's about. And it's just a good refresher for those of you that have been through TRAC. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, my name is John Cleveland. I'm a senior deputy county council. I work with OCCR and a variety of boards, commissions, councils. Mark is here to sign council. This is going to be, as Pam mentioned, a high-level overview. Happy to take some general questions at the end, but if there's any fact-specific questions or sensitive issues they'd like to discuss, we can make time for that after the meeting. We're going to talk about key definitions and basic rules. Definitions are really key to understanding the Brown Act and the rules related to the Brown Act. Standing and ad hoc committees, what's the difference and what rules apply? What happens when there's violations? Who enforces the Brown Act? Basic agenda requirements, public participation in these meetings. Throughout the presentation, we'll get some frequently asked questions, and there may be a pop quiz. So, so the goal of the Brown Act is to ensure that public meetings are open and public, to facilitate public's participation in the decision-making process. This is a really kind of a power-packed slide here. It talks about how agendas need to be issued 72 hours before a regular meeting, and things need to be open to public, and legislative bodies need to make sure to keep their discussions, deliberations, and actions limited to what's on the agenda. And everyone has a tendency to want to get as much done as possible during a meeting, but it's important to limit your discussion, deliberations, and actions to what's on the meeting. And if something needs to happen in the future, you bring it back, you agendize it for the next meeting. So again, the basic rule, meetings need to be open to public, deliberations need to be open to public, and the whole purpose is to facilitate open government and curb the misuse of a secret legislative process. So we're going to talk about definitions. These are a few of them. Legislative body and local agency. A legislative body includes commissions, committees, and boards created by formal action of a legislative body. And local agencies include counties and committees, boards, commissions thereof. Brown Act applies to standing committees of legislative bodies that have either continuing subject matter jurisdiction or a meeting schedule fixed by charter, ordinance, resolution, or formal action of a legislative body. So your standing committees, depending on how they're formed, could be subject themselves to the Brown Act. Here's a little frequently asked question. If a standing committee is comprised of less than a quorum, which makes you think of an ad hoc or temporary committee, is it still subject to the Brown Act? And the answer is yes, if it has continuing subject matter jurisdiction or a meeting schedule that is fixed by formal action of that legislative body. So be careful of that. There's the familiar ad hoc committee exception to the definition of a legislative body, and it's really a better term, a temporary advisory committee that's composed solely of less than a quorum. So if you have something that's temporary, serves a single purpose, it's not perpetual, and it's dissolved once that specific task is completed, then it's not subject to the Brown Act's requirements. You don't have to worry about agendas and public meetings. here's a little frequently asked question. If you have a legislative, if the legislative body creates an ad hoc committee and it states that the ad hoc will not have continuing jurisdiction, but it ends up that things linger on and it just keeps going and going and going and it's not dissolved and it turns out to be perpetual, is that subject to the Brown Act's requirements? Yes, it is. Substance controls over form. So you really do need to make sure that if you're using an ad hoc committee to maybe investigate a specific issue, you hit those three criteria: limited single purpose, not perpetual, and dissolved once a specific task is completed. The next key definition is meetings. A meeting is any congregation of a majority of members of a legislative body at the same time and location, including teleconference, that or electronic means to hear, discuss, deliberate, or take action on any item within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. So it's, you know, it's not just voting, it's also discussing or deliberating. And the definition of meeting can include social events, lunches, things like that. Theoretically, a legislative body could all go out to lunch and not discuss anything, not deliberate within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. But the chances of it happening are too great, and you really want to avoid the appearance of impropriety. So the recommendation is to avoid situations like that, unless there's a specific exemption, and we'll talk about limited narrow exemptions later in the presentation. So the Brown Act can apply to serial meetings, even serial meetings that are completed through electronic means, such as a reply all on an email. And the serial meeting process could take place through a daisy chain scenario or a hub and spoke scenario where one single person conveys the position of multiple legislative members to one another, thereby creating a serial meeting. But one-way briefings, such as a briefing from staff to legislative members, are of course permitted. Similarly, a legal memorandum from county council to a board or legislative body is not a meeting under the Brown Act. Quick question, are board members limited regarding the items they can or can't discuss via email, text, social media? Yes, serial meetings are prohibited even when using electronic communications. Talked about that a little earlier. Emails, text, social media. Can't discuss or deliberate, no matter whether you're using electronic means or meeting in person. We'll just continue here on the same topic. There's a specific code section that even goes as far as addressing likes on social media. So if a member of the legislative body is posting a response to another member's position on a topic within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body, that could constitute a violation of the Brown Act. Similarly, a legislative body members can't use internet chat rooms, blog dialogues, or any other online platforms to discuss, deliberate, or take action. Here's the pop quiz. So when could a prohibited serial meeting inadvertently occur? Replying all to an email message, discussing an issue in an internet chat room, posting a like on social media, discussing an issue on a platform that features messages that disappear, or using an AI robot to communicate someone's position. And of course, the response is all the above. All of these could potentially violate. There are certain narrow exceptions to the Brown Act's definition of meeting. All of these are premised on the assumption that legislative members won't abuse the exception and discuss matters within the subject matter jurisdiction of the legislative body. There's an exception for individual contacts or conversations, such as staff briefings of legislative members. Conferences that are open to the public that address issues of general interest to the public, attendance at community meetings that are open to the public and publicized, attendance at open and notice meetings of another local agency, purely social or ceremonial occasions such as weddings or funerals, retirement parties, and attendance at open and notice standing committee meetings. So let's talk a little bit about agenda requirements. There's different agenda requirements depending on whether the meeting is regular, special, or emergency, and we'll touch on each of those briefly. So for regular meetings, the legislative body must state the time and place and post it, notice the time and place for the regular meeting, 72 hours in advance, in a location that's freely accessible to members of the public and on the agency's website. Typically, the meetings need to take place within the jurisdictional bounds that the legislative body is subject to, and the agenda must contain a brief general description of each item of business to be transacted or discussed. And here's the important part we kind of talked about earlier. Except as otherwise provided by law, no action or decision shall be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda. Special meetings are a little bit different. There's a shorter notice period. Special meetings are agendized by posting a notice and delivering written notice to all the members of the legislative body 24 hours prior to the meeting, instead of 72 hours. The notice shall specify the time and place of the meeting and the items to be discussed. Just like regular meetings, only items on that agenda may be discussed or deliberated upon at that special meeting. And finally, just so you're aware, there are emergency meetings for work stoppage, crippling activity, or other activity that severely impairs public safety or both. And the notice period for these emergency meetings is similar to special meetings, but telephonic notice is the only notice that's required. So let's talk about a little bit about the public's right to documents related to agendas. So you have an agenda, there's documents associated with it. When does the public get to get their hands on those documents so that it can review it and make comments and be involved? So if the board members receive the materials more than 72 hours before the scheduled meeting, the materials are deemed public records and they must be made available to the public upon request, and the location for those documents must be posted on the agenda. Now, if the documents are posted during the meeting, there's two time periods that apply depending on who gives the documents. If staff members or members of the legislative body produce the document, they need to be available during the meeting. If someone outside of the agency gave the legislative body or staff the documents, they need to be made available to the public after the meeting. And here's a little rule that can trip people up. If the legislative body members receive documents less than 72 hours before a regular meeting, then the materials need to be made available both to the public and to the legislative members at the same time. This could be a little awkward if there's a weekend involved and people want to do their work and review documents right away, but really you need to be giving them, making them available to the public and to the legislative members at the same time. Okay, let's talk about public participation. As I mentioned, meetings need to be open to public. There's secret ballots are not allowed. The legislative body needs to vote in public. And at each meeting, there needs to be an opportunity to provide public comment on each of the agenda items on the agenda, and also make general public comments on any item of interest within the subject matter jurisdiction or body, just like you did earlier today. So everyone wants to know, well, what can we talk about if it's not on the agenda? What are the exceptions? What's our leeway? How can we be efficient in our meetings and do as much as possible? The general rule, of course, is not to discuss any item that appears that's not on the agenda. But here are the limited exceptions. Members or staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony rights. Or they may ask for a question, for clarification, make a brief announcement, or make a brief report on his or her own activities. And a member of the legislative body may provide a reference to staff or the resources or for factual information, request staff report back to the body at a subsequent meeting, or of course, direct staff to place matter of business on a future agenda. So who enforces the Brown Act? The Brown Act can be enforced by the district attorney or any interested person. That enforcement can take the form of a writ of mandamus, a lawsuit for an injunction, or declaratory relief. Typically, the relief sought is to prevent violations or threaten violations and address past violations by members of the local legislative body. So when there's a civil action, the district attorney or that interested party will sue to have a court declare something null and void or invalidate action taken in violation of the Brown Act. And the prevailing plaintiff in those lawsuits can be entitled to attorney's fees, which itself is a significant deterrent to violating the Brown Act. This slide is for your awareness. It reiterates that there's actions to invalidate, there's actions to determine whether a past action was a violation of the Brown Act, and actions to prevent future violations, with code sections cited for each. What's important to know is that there are specific rules and strict deadlines for a allegation that there was a Brown Act violation, a response which can typically take the form of a opportunity to cure or cure and correct, and then a response by the potential plaintiff to either file a lawsuit or accept the response from the legislative body. So if you are ever to get an allegation that there's been a Brown Act violation, I recommend meet with your county council and formulate a strategy for a response within these very short time frames. There's also the potential for criminal enforcement. Criminal enforcement usually is rare, and it requires intent. It requires someone to intend to deprive the public of information for which the member knows or has a reason that the public is entitled to receive. Finally, just a quick frequently asked question. Do the bylaws supersede the Brown Act's requirements? No. The Brown Act supersedes the bylaws. The bylaws are written in a way to ensure compliance with the Brown Act. And that concludes my presentation. Are there any questions?
So do we get a certificate?
Yeah. That was the most concise Brown Act training.
Yeah. This training member, they can see if they don't cover this.
I know, normally it's 2 hours long.
Because of the quorum portion? That's a county decision across all of our commissions and all of our boards. Not a Parks Commission specific. And I know that other agencies do not do it that way. We used to not, but it was sort of different in different places.
I guess it's noticed, the public's invited, and you don't have a form, and it's just informational, it's still worth
it. I don't know if you want to answer that right now.
Sure, let me address it at a high level. So field trips are permitted as long as they're noticed as a public meeting. If you lack quorum, whether it's a field trip context or in a building context, and you just want to purportedly have a non-meeting, and it's not a meeting because you don't have quorum, there's a variety of challenges and problems that can arise. One of them has to do with a lot of bylaws that are set up in the county where quorum is defined as majority plus one. So if you have an odd number of people present, or an odd number on your commission, your quorum, you could end up having what's considered a Brown Act majority, as that majority phrase is used under the Brown Act, but not necessarily meet quorum for purposes of your bylaws, and then you're in a very awkward situation. Mm. But more importantly, the fiction of a non-meeting occurring doesn't really hold up well, in a lot of contexts. Maybe there's some rare exceptions, but usually what boards want to do is hear a presentation and then kind of report back at a subsequent meeting, which goes to show they're kind of doing business when they're lacking the required number of persons to hold that meeting. So,
just the easiest example of this is last month we were supposed to go to Carbon Canyon to just take a tour around whether it's the Redwoods or just the park in general. And so the staff spends all this time putting the notice together and getting preparing for it. Then for whatever reason the five of us can't attend and six of us can't attend. And so
the meeting was canceled, when it would still have been beneficial if even if three of us or two of us or four of us had been there, just to walk the grounds with the staff, talk about the issues that they have there. So we, when issues about carbon do come up, we've got that contact.
I understand your feelings, and it's not the first time that I've heard something like that. Resources have been expended, and you want to try and do business. But but it does sound like the business of the legislative body if you had one. And so then it's like, well, why are we doing that if you didn't have the required numbers?
You know, I was thinking the same thing, John. I didn't see any reason, if we had a couple of people that wanted to go on the boat to tour the harbor, and we didn't have a meeting, and we're not discussing any business, I don't see why we couldn't legitimize that and have that meeting, especially if staff goes through the trouble of making the arrangements, setting up the guides to show us around, and, you know, along those same lines.
Can you do that without having a majority then, so it's not a grounding violation because you don't have a majority of the commission?
Well, that's, you know, kind of what we're talking about. I think the best thing to do would probably be to find out more about the specifics of this issue and come back to it after this meeting.
Like, here's kind of a corollary to that. Let's say that the Parks Department has a morning walk open to the public. All six of us show up to go on that walk. Is that Brown Act violation?
Well, that's like the lunch after. Right. You know, I'd highly recommend against it. Because technically, you could avoid discussing, deliberating, or taking any action on any matter within the subject matter jurisdiction of your legislative body, but the chances of it happening inadvertently are too high, and the appearance of impropriety is there, so it's not recommended.
That's fun stuff, I know.
Are you ready for your quiz question? Okay, so there's five on the council, or five on the board, right? Two vote no, two vote yes, and one abstains. What options does that group have?
I would have to look at your bylaws, I think, and see what it says.
Not bylaws, just regular laws, just regular rules. You can call for reconsideration of the vote.
Yeah.
Your bylaws say how they handle
it. Even though, because usually if you have a tie, it doesn't pass. But if you have a 2-2 with one abstention, then you can have, at that particular point, a reconsideration of vote of all five.
Yeah. I like that question. Some bylaws do state what is required to pass a motion, or what's a majority, what's a quorum, and all those things can affect it. But I like your analysis.
Anyway, I want to thank you for what you presented. Fortunately, it gives us more in depth because of all of us, five of us are sitting on councils right now. But you know, it's always good to review that because I think it's important that if there's any updates or changes that we become aware of it. And so thank you for coming back or being here, spending the evening with us and going over. Are there any other questions from my constituents?
Yeah, just a quick question. It's somewhat on the line to your same questions. So obviously we have seven on paper, right? The seventh person, I never quite see him here. Third, David Hanson?
He's been here.
Oh, he's been here. I must have missed him then. Mm-hmm. So what happened when we
had the meeting when you weren't here, he was here.
Okay.
I'm like, maybe you guys talk ahead of time. I wouldn't recommend it.
They have that worked out. They go every other morning.
Okay. He's usually here. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, moving along, that is a receive and file item. Is there a motion to receive and file?
So moved.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Anybody abstained? That passes 6-0. We're now going to have a item B, which is OC Parks Fall and Winter Event Preview. Just make sure we're not all there at the same time.
Well, thank you, Chair. So tonight we have Christy Kwan. She's our strategic communications manager. I also call her the person that I go to whenever we need anything. And she's going to be presenting tonight. And as you can see, there's some of the, these are the old commissioners. They were waiting for a really long time for our meeting to start, but here we go. Is that not true?
Yes. On your radio. Good evening, commissioners. Nice to see you all. That was a very tough act to follow. My name is Christy Kwan, and I'm the strategic communications manager with OC Parks. I oversee the entire communications division, which includes all of our large-scale special events, which we're going to talk about tonight. So to kick things off, we do have an ongoing exhibit right now at the Old Orange County Courthouse. It's called The Other Side of Memory, Photographs by Luis C. Garza. It has striking visuals of historic moments of activism and community from the 1960s and 70s. And the nationally touring exhibition features rare black and white images drawn from Garza's archive, many of which are on display for the first time to the public. So this will be ongoing throughout the rest of the year. And it's free to visit Monday through Friday from 8 to 4:30 at the gallery inside the courthouse. Helena Modjeska was one of America's most famous Shakespearean actresses of the late 19th century. Her home, Arden Helena Modjeska Historic House and Gardens, is one of two National Historic Landmarks in Orange County. Come celebrate her birthday on Saturday, October 11th. And enjoy an opportunity to sample Polish food, watch traditional Polish folk dance performances, and explore the iconic home grounds with volunteers on site to share stories and answer questions about the property. So we will have two different time frames offered for this event. Reservations are required due to limited parking on site, but we do an off-site parking lot that we shuttle people in. We figured out those logistics. Halloween kicks off next weekend, so this is ongoing for two consecutive weekends from Friday, October 10th through Sunday, October 12th, and Friday, October 17th through Sunday, October 19th from 4:30 to 8:30. Tour the decorated historical grounds and take your picture at a variety of Halloween and fall-themed photo opportunities during special park hours. Costumes are encouraged and pets are welcome. Try to find your way through the straw maze and complete scavenger hunt for ghoulish goodies. Visit Santiago Oaks Regional Park after dark on Saturday, October 18th to discover the critters that call the canyon home. Who at the Oaks will include nature stations, creative crafts, a scavenger hunt for prizes, and guided night hikes. Doors open at 5:30 and guests are encouraged to arrive no later than 8 to be able to have time to see everything that is offered. Advanced registration is required for this event, and costumes are welcome, but participants must be able to safely hike on dirt trails in the dark. I don't know, the T-Rex would do well. Halloween Zootacular takes place at the OC Zoo on Saturday, October 25th. Activities include a scavenger hunt, trick-or-treating, and spooky crafts for kids. Come see the zoo animals receive treats filled pumpkins throughout the day, showcased in these two images. Reservations are not needed, and activities are free when paid zoo admission, which is $2 per person. Ages 2 and under are free. So good deal. Join us on Saturday, October 25th at the Peter and Mary Booth Interpretive Center at Upper Newport Bay Nature Preserve for a family-friendly Halloween party. Event includes spooky story times, creepy crafts, wacky science experiments, bizarre animal interactions, and hair-raising games. So fun for the whole family. Again, participants are encouraged to come in costume, so we have plenty of opportunity to show off all the fun costumes you may have. It will feature booths and exhibits from community partners, and event and parking are free. The 39th annual Candlelight Walk will return to Heritage Hill Historical Park for three evenings, December 5th through 7th. Enjoy an evening stroll through the decorated grounds, as well as live musical performances, holiday crafts for kids, and a visit with Santa. Light refreshments will be available for cash purchase. And the following weekend, the Heritage Hill will also be open with holiday lights. They do limit some of the other offerings that were offered the weekend before, but this is just the time to really take in all of the decor and the lights without as big of a crowd. But pets are also welcome, and bring your camera to take all the photos. Join us for holiday fun at the OC Zoo on Saturday, December 13th. Activities include visits with Santa and Mrs. Claus and holiday crafts for kids. Come see zoo animals, receive treat-filled gifts and treats hidden inside Christmas trees, as you can see from the bear. Reservations are not needed and activities are paid are free with paid zoo admission. So that's all day on the 13th. So if you would like to find out about these events and much more, you can find everything on our website. If you click on to our main page and you click on events, it will get you there. There's also the drop-down menu. If you're looking for something from a specific park facility, you can use that to get to that park to see what's happening. That is all I have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah, that's great.
Well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want to say that looks like great for families, but I can't imagine how much fun staff must have preparing for all this.
It's so fun.
Okay, that's a receive and follow. Is there a motion to receive and follow?
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Okay, we're going to go back.
Yeah.
Okay, who's first and who's second?
First is Jay, and second is Ryan.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
That was very enthusiastic.
Unanimous move.
Can you say all? No? That's probably
the all first.
Just put down old John and Ray. Okay, moving along.
All first, no second.
Yeah. Okay, we're now going to have item, it says OC Parks Commission meeting and field trip schedule amendment.
Well, I hope that you all were paying attention to the previous item. So we thought it would be great if you actually came to a field trip with a quorum, since we are required to do that right now. And I should say, we used to not have that. It used to be we would have field trips, and sometimes there would only be one commissioner that would show up. And we were okay with it because we had done all the work. Our legal team reviewed all of that and said some commissions were requiring quorum, some of them weren't for field trips. And they looked at all of our bylaws. All of our bylaws were updated. We did that, 2 years ago? And it is now very clear that whether you're having a field trip or you're having an office, it is considered a meeting, and therefore you have to have quorum. So I would recommend for our field trips that if you guys can't make it, we'll cancel earlier. But I think it's put it on your calendars and let's see what we can do. I think they're so valuable. You can always go to our parks anytime you want to and see them, but I think if we're able to actually have our field trips and have them happen, I think it's obviously more valuable.
Do you want to push back on this? The interpretation might...
I'm going to tell you that we had lots of discussions, and this is a county decision.
Okay.
So each county commission...
But there's only three votes.
I understand that, but what I'm saying is this was vetted for a very long time of what to do.
But I just given, I'm sorry to stick on this, yeah. But I think given the nature of parks, we're better off being in the field,
yeah.
Regardless of quorum or not, just to see it because it's informational more than it is deliberate.
So,
and I'm happy to lobby.
I would say this, is that each of you have the ability to do what you want. I would not direct you or recommend you do something like that. That's not my place as a staff member, but all of you have the ability to do what you want.
Is there an opportunity for us to plan our field trips less as field trips for the commission and more as tours of facilities? And I mean, just at the city, right?
Yeah.
We will break into groups of two. If there's something we need to see, two of us will go look at it together.
Yeah.
And it's a bigger burden on your staff because it's the same thing multiple times. But I've got to be honest, I think you're only going to get one group anyways because you're not getting more. And I know that I'm the worst of this because I can't get out of Laguna Beach to where some of these places are located.
No, we understand that. And then I know that's the challenge is that you all are too busy. And that makes it hard, right? It just, your calendars are very full. The field trip that we're recommending next time is something that's going to be open to the public, so we would be meeting before it's open to the public. But let's say that all of you say, or some of you say you can't go, you can still come to the event.
Right.
So at least on that case, it's canceling the official meeting, but you'd still be able to come and enjoy the event that night or a different night. So that's why we sort of planned it that way, so that way on the next one, at least there it wouldn't be wasted time. Yeah. Because it still would be, you'd still be able to go to the event and be able to enjoy it. And the other thing is that these two events, so there's a different event each of those weeks, the 5th or the 12th. We thought it might be easier actually on a Friday night as opposed to Friday during the day, so we thought that might be something for you guys to think about. And if you guys don't want to do it, that's okay too. We can just do meetings and suggest that you do tours on your own, but to be able to do the official meetings currently what the county's requiring is a quorum.
When you say tours on your own, would those be staff facilitated?
I think we could. It depends on what that means,
right?
And this is not on the agenda, so I want to be very careful, sure. Obviously, that we don't fail the product since we just got our training on the product. But I just wanted to clarify that this was something that we didn't used to do, and we used to just have them. And I think, Dave, we actually were, you were only one, I think, at Salt Creek a while back. And I think there was like 20 staff there. And we still did it.
You know, one of the things that we had considered historically was to have our field trip during a regular scheduled meeting because everybody has that date on their calendar. And usually most of us plan our calendar like months ahead.
Yeah.
So if we have a light agenda, it's a great time to have a meeting to where we have our normal monthly meeting, but we could also make it a field trip. That's another consideration for the committee.
I think the hard part with that, though, is that because our meetings are at night on a Thursday night, like right now, to go to most of our parks would not be as beneficial because it's dark. But I like your idea. But I think one of the things that we can do for, if you want, for next year, we're going to be bringing our calendar for next year, is we can decide on the time and the date so you guys can book it now. And that might be more helpful because we usually figure out exactly the date and the time later, but we can determine that. And the other option is that we could not have field trips and we give you information on all of our events and programs and just encourage you guys to go to those on your own. So I think there's a lot of different ways that we can do this to make sure that you guys have the ability to go.
If I may make a comment is, if we know ahead of time, it makes it much easier to look at our schedule and plan.
Yeah.
Like I said, all of us have a busy schedule.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Especially our chair, Sharpen, he has so many community. I have, it's beyond my fingers.
I believe that way. 20, right?
And he's able to make them, to all of them.
It's amazing.
Amazing. So, I mean, I think that if we have the information ahead of time, I think it'll be helpful.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, last tour at the park, it was my fault. I didn't look. I said, okay, I looked tomorrow, I'm going. So I went there. I'm not only talking about ourselves, but the public was there as well. There was a few public that came back because they thought there was one and they left. So it's not only hard for us, but the public that have an expectation to be there as well. So if we are committed, I think we should follow through it. And if it doesn't work, for example, you can't come because of emergency, we understand.
Yeah.
We understand. But if we're committed, I think we need to make an effort to be there. That's my point.
It's hard. I know it is. It's.
You know, Pam is an example. We have our scheduled regular meeting on December the 4th.
Right? Correct.
And that's in the evening. And so I know that Heritage Park is in the evening.
Correct, but it's the next night.
Yeah, but you're all set up.
Correct. We could do it on December 4th that evening, but I have to bring in the staff that are working Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, also on Thursday night. Mm-hmm.
But I know you set up a day ahead of time.
It's set up, but it's a lot of staff that are there to turn all those lights.
They don't start working until the next day.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's all set up. They're setting it up during the day, and they're testing the lights. But December 4th, it will be, we could do it, but it will cost us money.
You'd have to pull a shift to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we could just do it ourselves, we would, but we're not that talented.
Let's go. No staff. Let's go.
I think you guys know. We're not that talented.
Well, you have 6 volunteer workers here.
Which is great. So I think the question I have, though, is, and I mean, I could read this whole thing, but really, with December 5th or December 12th, a Friday night, and December even work for you guys? I know that you guys are busy, so that might be hard. So that's not, then we can just have a regular meeting and just encourage you to go to the events.
I just checked my calendar and I have obligations on the 4th, the 5th, and the 12th. So all 3 of those days are
up. Yeah, December is bad for all of us because everybody has things at Christmas and they're scheduled in January. So, but I think that is probably, if we're going to try to work one out, maybe that would be a good opportunity for us. You know, to go there. Maybe we can come up with a time on one of those days and try to squeeze it in.
But yeah, I mean, what is the rest of the commission's calendars of work?
I'm generally good for that.
Staff has not updated my calendar yet, so I can't get out of
it. Terrible team,
Yeah, I'm looking at it. But Mr. Cherry is correct. Usually December, there's a lot of benefits.
Yeah.
Why don't we do this, if it's okay with you, Pam, is we'll have everybody, we have this window of days. Why don't we all send in the days that we can be there and give us a time element, and then that would be a good way to do it. I know that I've attended that many times, and I just take my family along.
Meeting, you can bring your families.
So I never looked at it as though we're having a formal meeting, because all we did is the family went that way and I went with them, and you know what I'm trying to say.
I do. I understand that. And we are meeting in November, so what we could do is table it? No, what do we call it? Continue the item to the next meeting if someone wants to make that motion, and then you guys can send that information to us, and then based on what you send us, then we'll put this agenda back on the agenda. Thank you. For the next meeting to make it official, if there is a date that works for everybody, and if it doesn't, then we will not. If someone wants to make that motion.
So how can I make a motion to table to the next meeting? Mm-hmm. I request you to confirm everyone's timeline. And there's one motion.
Second.
And the next meeting will be November 6th. Or what date?
The next meeting is
November 6th.
Is it November 6th?
Yes.
November 6th, yes.
Okay. Yes, November 6th. Right. Here.
Same time, same location.
Yep. Okay. 6 p.m.
So that was moved in second.
Yes, mm-hmm. Second by Commissioner John.
All in favor? Anybody opposed? Anybody abstain? That passes? Okay.
Okay.
Well, thank you. We'll reach out to Commissioner Hanson.
Okay, I know I've asked this question before, but is there anyone in the audience who would like to address the item, the 2 agenda items? I don't want to miss anybody out there. Okay, thank you. Okay, we're now getting our OC Parks director's report.
Thank you very much. We've been talking about the e-bikes, and I know that there was a speaker tonight about that, so I just wanted to give a brief update. I know that it takes longer than anybody wants it to, so this is where we're at this time. And just as a refresher, this was just the commission was asking staff to explore the possibility and feasibility of allowing Class 1 e-bikes on unpaved trails. So since then, OC Parks has been coordinating with the state and federal wildlife agencies, USFWS and CDFW, the Natural Communities Coalition, and the easement holders, the Nature Conservancy, and the OC Parks Foundation. So there's been a lot of meetings and a lot of discussions. The state and federal wildlife agencies overseeing the NCCP, HCP, and SSHCP have emphasized that any consideration required demonstrating compatibility with the conservation plans, likely through a focused study with extensive monitoring. So we're talking, it won't be something that they can just approve. Discussions with the state and federal wildlife agencies overseeing the NCCP, HCP, and SSHCP are ongoing and focused on the type of data that is needed to demonstrate whether e-bikes are compatible with the conservation plans and the process for providing that information. So consultation to date has leaned toward requiring a robust focus study with extensive monitoring. The NCC right now is putting together a study, and we're not sure if it's going to be comprehensive enough, so we're waiting to find out, since NCC is already funding this study, if we're able to do it as part of that, obviously then that would be beneficial for us, but we don't know if it will be enough for the federal and the state wildlife agencies. So that's what we're trying to find out. If not, then what we're going to do is we'll come back here, because we said we would tell you how much it would be. If it's with NCC, then there will be no cost to parks. If it's not, then it's probably going to be pretty expensive. So that's where we're at right now, and we just wanted to give you an update. I know this takes a long time. I think the hard part for the state and the wildlife, the federal wildlife agencies, this is not an easy answer, and every community is unique, and we have some pretty strict conservation easements, and so they just want to make sure that they're not just saying yes or no, and they want to make sure that they do their due diligence. So that's where we're at. And we can have a robust discussion about it tonight. I just wanted to give you an update. So again, we don't violate the product.
Exactly. Will we get continual updates?
You will. Yeah, as
portion of the agenda.
Correct. Unless there's actually something for you to do, I will just give you guys updates. But if there's actually action, then I'll bring it as an item.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah. You're welcome.
I want to say thank you for this too. I mean, there have been a lot of public comments regarding this matter being looked at and pointing to this system or that system that allow it, and so glad you guys are taking the time and effort in doing it, because otherwise there's not a lot for us to say if it's not being studied.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, so I'll keep you updated and stay tuned.
Thank you.
A couple of things I think are really exciting. This summer we had 26,250 people attend our summer concerts. And then we had 22,800 people attending the movies. Now that is a record for our movies. It is 7,600 more than we had last year. Like, it was kind of amazing, and that's due to Christy and her team. So,
well done.
Well done.
So who brought out the popcorn?
I thought you were supposed to. If you were curious, because I think trivia is fun, is highest. Attendance were both at Salt Creek Beach, but I think it's because, one, there's a beach behind there, and also it's the largest venue. Mm-hmm. And that was...
It's okay, guys.
It's okay.
It's okay.
It's just okay. A data point. Well, No Doubt had the highest attendance for concerts, and that is a No Doubt cover band. Mm-hmm. They had a crowd of 4,200 people. That's a lot of people. And then for the movie, Moana 2 with 4,000. Mm-hmm. That's a lot. Also, just really good entertainment all the way around. And then in September, right here on campus, we hosted the annual volunteer celebration at OC Parks headquarters. And we have 1,300 active volunteers, but we had about 400 volunteers that were here.
Wow.
But this is the good number. 87,918 volunteer hours last year. Like, our volunteer program, we've been bringing little snippets to you guys. They're amazing. And then this is, if someone can do a drum roll, we've won some awards, so this is really exciting.
Thank you very much.
So we are recognized by the National Association of Counties, NACO.
One.
Nope, something's wrong with this. Three CMA. This one. Sorry.
Ooh, there's more than one.
These two. If you want to pass them around and show them. So the first award was in the category of Parks and Recreation for the opening of Saddleback, Gypsum Canyon, and Red Rock Wilderness Areas in the Irvine Ranch Open Space. So that is really exciting. And then the second one is the volunteer category for the OC Parks Volunteer Education and Engagement Program, which included the creation of the OC Parks Volunteer Treks
training, resources, education, knowledge, and stories, and a continuation education opportunity for volunteers to develop their knowledge on various topics related to OC Parks. The second award, which is really the third award, but the second award that we won, is from the City County Communications and Marketing Association, otherwise known as 3CMA, and that's the acrylic award. And that was for the 2024 OC Park Sunset Cinema Film Series, which won an award of excellence in the category of best use of social media campaign. I love it when we get to turn around for it, that's great. And the 2024 Sunset Cinema Film Series featured a dynamic social media campaign to promote 12 movie events and tailored pre-show activities, reaching more than 480,000 users. And the creative campaign engaged new and existing followers with OC Parks and drew more than 15,000 visitors to Sunset Cinema events, which saw a 7% increase in attendance per event from 2023. So as you can see, I think because of all the work that they did last year and all the people who started coming, it really helped a lot of attendance this year. So anyway, pretty amazing. And then last, I wanted to give you an update on the Weir Canyon Conservation Cattle Grazing Pilot Project, which we all learned about. Who doesn't want to see some cute little cows? Actually, this is what I learned. You're actually not allowed to call them cows until they become parents. Mm-hmm. So they're now just cattle.
Cattle.
I learn things every day. So this is the cattle. So they actually have been in Weir Canyon. And I went out there and saw, and they are really good. When we were talking about this before, and they said they only eat the invasive grass and they stay away, it was crazy. They ate the grass, the bad stuff, and then they left the good stuff. So they actually are doing what they need to do, and it's because you have to cycle them. So before, when we had cattle here, they just ate everything because they weren't moving around enough. But because it's being very focused and it's a smaller group of cattle, then it's making it. So far it's working, but again, this is a 5-year project. And so we'll continue giving you guys update, but I just thought that was really cool. Thank you, James.
Is that a quorum of cattle?
It actually, over on the right side, that is the quorum. On the left side, that is not. Great question. Thank you.
I want to make sure you check my cattle voting body.
That is correct, yeah. That concludes my presentation, but happy to answer any questions you might have on any of these items or anything else.
So on all the awards that you have you figured out the ongoing storage costs?
Yes. Priceless.
Well, we used to not display them, but now we have a case out front.
We have a case out here. We also have another case over in our building. So we're really proud to display all of our awards.
We usually have them stacked like this on top of each other.
I do remember. Yeah. And then inside your packet, there's the specific information on all the events that we have coming up. So go to everything.
Are there any other questions? Thank you, Ken.
But not together.
But not together. And.
Okay, moving on. At this time, we're opening up for commissioner comments or reports. Anybody have anything they'd like to report?
Yeah, I'd like to say thank you to all of the staff on behalf of Lieutenant Flint. I know I put you guys through a lot, not the least of which is the ongoing work in the harbor, but you know, Mike's work on the fencing and everything that we've got going on. Throughout anything, whether it's Salt Creek Trail or whatever else, I just thank you very much for listening to me and helping when you can and tell me to calm down when you can't. So thank you for that. I'm sure we're going to have a lot of discussions before we ever get to Baby Beach decision. So and I can't really say much more than that because I'm in the decision-making body, so that's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
The only thing that I have, I was going to ask for some update on the e-bike studies, and I just want to make sure we don't lose track of that primarily because I do think there's so many people in the community that are interested. So that would be my only request, is just that continue to be a part of your updates now on a regular basis until such time as it needs to be agendized again.
Well, thank you.
No comments on that. Well, I want to thank the OC Park and many of our supporters, including Supervisor Nguyen. So last weekend, one of our business owners organized the largest outdoor potluck. And as of right now, Fountain Valley holds the largest potluck in the United States, outdoor. Mm-hmm. We had great support from OC Park. The park ranger was there. Jim was there. Mm-hmm. The sheriff was there. So it was a great experience. It was very peaceful, all right? Mm-hmm. It was music. People had a great time. And so we had so much fun that the city is talking about, you know, they'll bring it back next year. We want to hold the largest in the world. So I want to thank you, OC Park, for your support. Amazing staff that was out there, the park ranger. Yeah, I want to thank you because everyone support. We were able to have a successful event, so I want to thank you.
I just want to say thank you to all the people who work at OC Parks, you know, every position in here that, you know, builds the foundation that keeps the ship running. So, you know, good job to everybody that does that, including those that are before us today.
And tomorrow, Chair Pam will be running the OC Parks Foundation meeting, so we're looking forward to that. We're going to get a financial breakdown from the auditors, I believe, and we'll find out how much money we can bring back and dump on us.
Okay. Maybe not say it that way.
Now, Pam always makes sure that we get equitable share, fully did it that, because that's what it's all about, is to bring that money back for many of the programs. One of the reasons why we won that award with our volunteers is because of our youth program that we put on at the schools in South County. So the money's well spent, and it really benefits us for everything that we do.
Yeah.
Any other business? Okay, if you get home, you can watch the Rams game. Adjourn.
Thank you.
You could just adjourn.